My name's John Arroyo, and let's see, I think the first Elephant Six band I saw was Olivia Tremor Control, and that was at the Troubadour. I was a freshman in college, so this was like 98, fall of 98. And Airplane Over the Sea must have come out by this point. I can't tell what the actual date of the release date was that, but it must have been out because I started hearing a lot about Neutral Milk Hotel, and I had a college radio show at my school, and so we would get a lot of things in, and that was one thing that seemed to be on heavy rotation with a lot of the sort of other indie radio things going on. And it was one of those things which at first listen you kind of knew was brilliant, but you wouldn't know if you could talk to other people and let them know whether or not they would think that. It's kind of like the Magnetic Field 69 love songs almost. It's a similar comparison in that it's pretty amazing and special, but other people you might play it to, you're just afraid that they're going to say it's okay when you know it's so much more than okay. And so it was a sort of a tough thing, and it wasn't until I was talking to a good friend of mine who was at that Olivia Tremor Control show with me, who had also confessed that she was really into this record. And I'm kind of at a point where I think when I meet people and I talk about music, if Neutral Milk is mentioned and if they seem to just, their eyes light up when they mention that record, it's sort of a keeper person. Like, you just know, like, you'd want to be friends with someone like this. And so that album, I bought it on vinyl too, and I had heard about this book, and I thought it was pretty exciting, and I had vaguely heard about the 33 and a third series through the Grace book for Jeff Buckley. And so I don't know, I just it still constantly floors me. Holland 1965 is, yeah, just, I think, still one of those perfectly amazing, just super special songs. And it's always hard to talk to people about those things, I think, because you just want someone to feel the same way, and you just don't know what to tell them if they don't. You just, like, you know, they're like a unicorn or something. If they don't feel anything, having listened to that whole thing in its entirety, and you only wish it was longer. And, you know, I picked up Live at Jittery Joe's, and I like Avery Island a lot too, but there were a lot of other Elephant Six bands that listening to Neutral Milk really sort of spurned me onto, like Beulah, I think, is Elephant Six. And I don't even know how active that collective still is as an actual group of people with all these little side bands or not, but it's sad that most of them have just come to an end, and they've made something great, and that's the end. Like, I really like Granddaddy too, and they recently announced that they're no more, they're releasing their last record, they're not touring. And so sometimes you just kind of assume and think it's okay that someone's made something really great and that's the end of that, and you're just happy, kind of like Grace, like Jeff Buckley's Grace. It's just, you accept that and you're happy that you got whatever you got out of them. So that's sort of how I feel.
Hello. Sure. This is Craig Saravalo. I have a very, I'm going to say, limited, but thankful that I had a small part in the Elephant Six Collective way back in 1997-98. I was a bass player for the band called Great Lakes for a very small amount of time, and I was roommates with Ben and Jamie of that band. And I guess since this is a Neutral Milk Hotel podcast, I should tell my most favorite memory of that time is that I was just moved to Athens, and Dan Donahue, who's the other the lyrical genius of Great Lakes, he and I were driving to Atlanta because he was going to take me to this video store that apparently had these really great rare videos, that, and this is before the days of DVD, so he always went to this store and picked up these, you know, amazing things. I think the most thing that was interesting to me about it was that it had Let It Be, the Beatles documentary, on tape that I could never find. So he said it's there, so I went with him. And he had a tape of On Avery Island, and he put it in for the drive, and we didn't talk for, you know, 40 minutes of this record. And I realized that these guys were living in this town and were playing shows potentially with the band that I was in, and I got really excited but really intimidated at the same time, thinking there's no way that we can make something this great. But then of course I realized that, you know, that wasn't the point. But the second time, don't compare, you know, that's ridiculous. Then the second time is when right before I left to move to Los Angeles, the guys just came back with in the airplane over the sea in their hand, and they had a little bit of a listening party at Dottie and Andrew's house, Andrew from Elf Power and Dottie from Love Montreal. And I sat there with Scott, and we listened to the entire record with other people as well. And I just sat there in silence because I was blown away by that record. And of course, you know, as everyone was. And you know, I just left. The record was over. You know, we said goodbye, and I left. And later, I heard, which was the greatest thing ever, later, Dottie said, "Did you like that?" I was like, "Of course." You know, it's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. And she said, "Scott thought you hated it because you didn't say anything to him afterwards. You just left." I was like, "Well, you know, what was I supposed to say?" I was overwhelmed by it. So, I don't know. Those are the two stories that I want to tell, and I'm glad that the record is getting what it deserves, and I'm glad that Kim wrote the book on it, because I think she did an amazing job with putting it together. So, thank you, and that's it.
Okay. My name is Brian Daugherty. I came here much more out of an interest in what Kim Cooper has to say than an interest in the record, per se. I do own the record. In the late 90s, I tended to pick up whatever all of the kids were talking about. You know, I have come to think that if lots of people seem extremely excited about a record, I am apt to find something of worth in it, even if I don't like it as much as they did. So I bought it probably within 2 years of its release, but not when it just came out. I've probably played it 10 times. I think I played it a couple of times since knowing that Kim was going to write this book. And it hasn't stuck with me. I recognize it as a record of some quality, but its emotional impact that it seems to have on some people hasn't hit me yet. The conclusion of the book, which Kim read out loud tonight, I found very affecting, and I do hope that after reading the book that I can reapproach the record and begin to see in it what Kim and its devoted fans have heard.
Hi, this is Kim Cooper. I am the author of Neutral Milk Hotels in the Airplane Over the Sea. And my podcasting master, Richard, has asked that I read the conclusion that I just shared with our friends here at the Reading at Book Soup on the Sunset Strip. This is page 103 to 104 of the book, giving it all away. Jeff is alive, he's sane, and he's well. He sometimes plays on his friends' records, but he isn't making Neutral Milk Hotel music. At least not for public consumption. It's his life, and he's living it. The music that he made with his friends glows with a special light. The songs are beautiful and fascinating, the playing unpredictable and soulful, the production sympathetic and effective. But that's not why so many people care about Neutral Milk Hotel and hold In the Airplane Over the Sea so close to their hearts. The band and their music are manifestations of the rarest kind of love, a love that rescued a bunch of smart, emotional, misfit kids stuck in redneck towns and hard-nosed cities, plunked them down in a series of warm and welcoming homes, trusted them to be themselves without fear of being mocked, let them all blossom. Airplane was Jeff's flower, watered and sheltered and fed by his dear friends. Julian Coster, whose life was immeasurably enriched by the souls he found in Ruston, has a message for young musicians and artists who are trying to find their way. It seems like he's talking to his teenage self when he says, emphatically and sweetly, "I think what Elephant Six meant for us is very simple. There's something pure and infinite in you that wants to come out of you, that can come out of no other person on the planet. That's what you've got to share, and that's as real and important as the fact that you're alive. We were able, at a really young age, to somehow protect each other so we could feel that. The world at large, careerism, money, magazines, your parents, the people at the rock club in your town, other kids. Nothing is going to give you that message, necessarily. In fact, most things are going to lead you away from it. Sadly. Because humanity is really confused at the moment. But you wouldn't exist if the universe didn't need you. And any time I encounter something beautiful that came out of a human somewhere, that's them, that's their own soul. That's just pure. Whatever its physicality is, if the person can play piano, if they can't play piano, if they're tone deaf, whatever it is, if it's pure, it hits you like a sledgehammer. It fills up your own soul, it makes you want to cry, it makes you glad you're alive. It lets you come out of you. And that's what we need. We desperately need you. The end.